The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Right. All of these segments in this week's news and commentary section originally aired in 2013. Enjoy.
Well, hello, kids. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for Black Friday, November 29th, 2013.
So, I don't know how many of my listeners actually spend much time hanging around water coolers. But for those of you that may have metaphorical water coolers, if not actual ones, here is some fodder for some community speculation. So just in the last few weeks, here on the Thunderbolt, I have trashed Jeff Bezos. I have trashed Bill Gates Jr. I have trashed the Democratic Party in general. And I have trashed Barack Obama and Denny Heck in particular. So, are there any liberal Washington State sacred cows that I have not yet gutted? Why, yes, as a matter of fact. Can you say Boeing? You see, the thing about Boeing is that they are the second largest war profiteer in the world. This means that our financial too-big-to-lose leading employer of Washingtonians is one of the most dangerous threats to the future survival of humanity that currently exists.
Some are rich, some are poor. Some folks see what they can't find. Some want power, some want glory. Some just want their peace of mind. First we're up, then we're down again.
In their latest outrage, at a time when the Washington State Supreme Court has ruled that funding for education is unconstitutionally inadequate, and at a time when state programs that benefit the homeless, orphans, the disabled, the elderly, and the mentally ill, at a time when funding for all of these programs is being slashed, Boeing has been negotiating yet another massive tax break from the state by holding a guns to our head. i.e. threatening to move their production to any state that is willing to assist Boeing in running minimum wage sweatshops.
Some have fallen, some have risen, some succeed where others fail. Some are free, some in prison. One soul's freedom is another one's jail. All our hearts, desires, yearnings, some we lose, you know, some we win. Wheel of fortune just keeps on turning. Here it comes around again.
Yes, kids, the governor and the spineless wimps in our state house just spent tens of millions of tax dollars on a special session of the state legislature specifically so that they could publicly fall all over themselves begging Massa to please not beat us anymore and please just give Boeing anything and everything that they may want. Yes, according to Crosscut, the final cost of the tax breaks to the state and local governments will be on the order of $2.8 billion. $2.8 billion is more than the state spends to fund the University of Washington. But we do have some heroes in this story for part of Boeing's demands, including the standard insistence that the workers who actually create the jets and the bombs that create all this wealth, Boeing is insisting that the workers that create their fortune for them must eat crap, even as Boeing reaps in billions of dollars in profits. Yes, unlike the spineless sold-out Democrats in the State House, the Machinist Union told Boeing to stick it where the sun don't shine.
I don't love and I don't hate you. Learn a lesson along the way. Feed the hungry and you cloak naked. Wheel of fortune will turn your way. Take a chance on the wheel of fortune. Round and round it'll turn for you. Come on, dance on the wheel of fortune. Where it goes is up.
Yes, kids, the Machinist Union rejected Boeing's hostage demand by a nearly 2-to-1 margin.
Round we go, take a chance on the wheel of fortune. Where it stops, God only knows.
So again, that was my friends from the 80s back in Massachusetts, One Seed. Many are referring to the Machinist Union vote as a suicide pact, and it probably was indeed. But you see, the thing is that both paths were suicide. You know, the other choice basically consisted of capitulating and bending over and letting Boeing ruin everybody's future. So instead, they chose to go down with their pride intact. And thus, the Thunderbolt gives serious kudos to the Boeing Machinist Union. And so now, in honor of Black Friday, and in the spirit in which Black Friday to us comes, I now present a report on an interview with a vampire. This is excerpted from an interview with filmmaker and former politician Aaron Russo, wherein Mr. Russo described a conversation that he once had with his one-time friend, Nicholas Rockefeller. Rockefeller: by having this war on terror, you can never win it. So you can just keep on taking people's liberties away indefinitely. Russo: what are you doing this for? What is the point of all this? You have all the money in the world you could ever want and all the power. You are hurting people, and it is not a good thing. Rockefeller. What do you care about the people for? Take care of yourself and take care of your family. Rousseau. What are the ultimate goals here? Rockefeller. The ultimate goal is to get everyone chipped with an RFID chip and have all the money and all of everything else be on those chips. And if anyone wants to protest what we do or violate what we want, we just turn off their chip. So do you see what I mean? This is what I'm talking about, kids. If Mr. Rockefeller needs to be provided with an explanation for why people should care about people, and I suspect he's incapable of even understanding the explanation, much less ever actually taking the sentiment to heart. And this attitude is what is killing us, kids. They steal everything, they kill everyone so that they can erect some impenetrable wall betwixt themselves and the world, even though the world always wins in the end, and even though the storms they unleash often get out of hand and sweep everything away, taking them right along with it. And this is very bad because this attitude is contagious. This attitude is synergistic. This attitude perpetuates itself. Ill will begets ill will, violence begets violence, and hatred begets hatred. Everything feeds on itself, and then it often builds up to great crescendos of literal mass insanity. And the costs are paid for generations, too. Due to the brutalization of an entire generation, all of those Central American countries that were ruled by brutal, murderous American-backed military dictatorships during Ronald Reagan's heyday in the 80s, many of those countries now have civilian murder rates that are killing just as many innocents as many of their numerous American-inspired and financed civil wars did. And this violence will also spread, and this violence will also perpetuate, and this violence will also synergistically grow. Now, a natural response to Mr. Rockefeller's attitude would be to ask this: why should we care about Mr. Rockefeller? Maybe we should follow Mr. Rockefeller's advice, and maybe we should take care of ourselves and take care of our families by mounting a revolution against Mr. Rockefeller's ilk. But the whole point of our whole struggle is that we are better than they are. We do not dehumanize people, even those who dehumanize others. If they are such terrible people, why on earth would we ever want to use them as role models for our own behavior? That said, though, do you really think it would be in yours or your family's interest to invest someone like Nicholas Rockefeller with the power to turn off your chip if you bitch about one of his wars or if you complain about him stealing your pension fund? So if you do not think this is a very good idea, you need to get out into the streets, kids. Because that is the only thing that ever brings any change you can believe in. Yeah, you need to get out in the streets because otherwise, Mr. Rockefeller and RFID will be coming soon to a neighborhood near you. So I have been criticized more than once in the past for mixing the personal and the political in the Thunderbolt. Now, the people who make these arguments have several very good reasons, both tactical and strategic, for making them. And I acknowledge the strength of their arguments. But I have shunned their advice, and I have continued my policy of mixing the personal and the political, and I continue because I firmly view them as one in the same. I have a few times in the past committed actual acts of journalism. 99.9% of what I do here is aggregate and commentate. Over many decades of following world events, I have figured out how to tell who is doing actual reporting and who is a propaganda shill. And I at least like to think that I am good at figuring out what is really going on, as opposed to what the corporate media machine says is going on. Propagandists actually have numerous little tricks they use, and I have studied their literature in the past. I have read both Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, and I have read most of Crystallizing Public Opinion by Edward Bernays. And if you know what those tricks are, then you can usually spot them a mile away. So people have a lot of names for what I do. My girlfriend calls me a wizard. But I've always preferred magician, even though that not only fails to accurately describe what I do, but creating illusions is kind of the opposite of what I do. Calling myself a wizard always just seems so presumptuous. And so now today, I'm going to share some of the secrets of a magician with you, my listeners. For when I was 22 years old, I was a very messed up and totally lost young man. I was homeless and living variously on the streets, in abandoned buildings, and couch surfing in a small Colorado hippie artist mountain town called Manitou Springs. I had no center. I had no direction. I was a thief. I had terrible things happening to me all the time. I went seriously hungry several times, and I twice almost froze to death without even realizing it until years later, when I read about the signs of advanced hypothermia. Then, a 40-year-old woman evidently saw something in me, for she took me under her wing and into her bed, and in between bouts of the most incredible sex that I've ever experienced to this day, she taught me many of the tricks for living a life of magic that have proven to be the most invaluable things that I have ever learned in my entire life. And even though I lived for the next 30 years on the road, and even though I lived by my instincts and by the seat of my pants, rather than according to any predefined plan, after cleaning up my karma, I was never once again cold or hungry from that day forward. Now, the main thing to know about magic is that it all works on karma. I have absolutely no idea of how or why karma works. I just know for an established fact that it does, because I have not only been literally living on it for my entire adult life,
but I spent 30 years of that life out on the very edge of the American insanity, often intentionally throwing myself into very dangerous situations because there is a lot to learn in such situations. I not only survived without injury, but I thrived there due to the fact that I always knew I was protected by my magic. Now, a few things about karma. It does not mean that if you are a good person, then good things will happen to you and that you will get whatever you want. What it does mean is that if you are a good person, and if you pay attention, and if you act upon the messages, then you will get what you need to get you wherever you need to go. Just keep in mind that what you need and what you want is not always the same thing. Now, you would think that spending 6 years in prison automatically qualifies as bad karma. But literally telling a U.S. customs agent to go F himself, whilst fully aware that doing so was going to cost me a bunch of years in a federal prison, was a defining moment in me creating myself and taking command of my karma, even at the cost of losing physical control of 6 years of my life. And another thing about karma is the more you trust it, the better it works. And if you can ever learn to completely trust it without question, then you need never fear anything ever again. So again, the prison experience. I was in my 40s before they got a hold of me. So I had been practicing magic for over 20 years already by that point. I knew I needed to do all of this stuff even as I was doing it, but while I knew I would figure it out eventually, I must admit that while it was actually happening, I just had to say, wow, man.
Back to the earth I scream now, and no one listens to me. Back to the earth I live now, follow.
Really?
Like I'm a commercy, my heard my word. Like I'm a commercy, my heard my word.
However, I am now a man who told a U.S. customs agent to go F himself and spent 6 years in prison for it. Thus, I paid my karmic dues, and thus I am now enjoying my personal life as much as I ever have in my entire life, and my current bliss is a direct result of having told that U.S. customs agent to go F himself and spending 6 years in prison for it.
They're coming down now.
Amongst many other things, after 6 years in prison, it is really hard to find too many things to become too upset about whilst conducting daily life in the real world. Anyway, all of this is closely related to my being a magician or a wizard or a witch or whatever appellation you may wish to apply. We are people who consciously use this kind of stuff to manipulate our personal realities. Now, this doesn't mean I can wish for a perfect girlfriend and get one if I keep my karma clean, though my current girlfriend is about as close as I can imagine.
I feel it, back to the earth I'm falling.
And it does not mean that I won't spend years in prison for something I didn't do.
Back to the earth I feel it, back to the earth I'm falling.
It means that I control the overall meme of what happens in my life.
Many of the visions of you, many of the visions of me, many of the visions of you, many of the visions of me.
We do all this sort of in cooperation with our karma. But that gets into some weirder stuff because it seems to me as if we both create our karma and yet are simultaneously created by our karma, both at the same time. Now, I must also issue a warning to all potential magicians here. Before you actually start consciously using this stuff to manipulate things, you need to keep in mind that in taking that step, you are at that moment irrevocably committing yourself, walking a path of the absolute straight and narrow. For if, when, you ever subsequently start wandering off in sketchy directions, then you will not only immediately get whacked, but you will get whacked much worse than someone who does the same thing, but does so because he or she is blindly stumbling through their lives as the victims of their karma, rather than as the controllers of it. That is because they don't know any better. While you either do, or if you don't, then you damn well should if you're going to start playing with this stuff. Because sometimes playing with magic is similar to playing with fire. Any more than that, though, and I can't say too much more about too much of anything else, as each individual has their individual job. And each individual has their own individual path. Now, each individual has an individual karma, and each individual has individual manners of interacting with their karmas. In addition, there are always zillions of things happening all the time, everywhere, all around us, and they happen zillions of layers beneath any human's ability to comprehend all of that. And all of that also affects our individual karmas. And in addition to all that, there's also the influence of our collective karmas, as both a species and as a part of planet Earth. And thus, there are few one-size-fits-all solutions or answers to much of anything. As far as I know, there is no magician's handbook, except for the ones in Hogwarts, and possibly hidden in any novel written by Tom Robbins. So by the very nature of karma, your individual experiences with magic will be totally individual and unique. I can reveal some of the framework for you, but ultimately, you will need to work all of this out on your own. But the most important thing is to have fun while you're doing it. Yippee! And on that note, we're going to take a quick station break. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. So today is the 56th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. On the 50th anniversary in 2013, I produced a Thunderbolt about that assassination, and most years since then, I have replayed that segment on the third week of every November, and I'm doing it again this year. This piece is called 50 Years After. Enjoy. Pretty much everyone who was over 5 years old in 1963, when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, remembers what they were doing when they heard the news. This has been invariably the case for everyone that I have ever met for the entire 50 years since that time. I, for instance, was 10 years old. I was either parking or retrieving my bicycle from the bike rack at my elementary school when a kid ran up completely breathless and freaked out and told me what had happened. All of the schools subsequently shut down, almost all of the stores subsequently closed, and pretty much everyone subsequently went home and watched television for the rest of the day and for a good part of the next several days as the drama played out. The memorials of the 50th anniversary of that assassination have been interesting.
Many people jeeringly mock those of us who admire John F. Kennedy by pointing out that he was a typical racist and Cold War militarist who expanded American imperialism in general and America's involvement in Vietnam in particular. They sometimes are even aware of the little-known fact that Kennedy's father, Joseph P. Kennedy, used his Chicago mob contacts to steal the 1960 election, and that Richard Nixon actually won in Illinois, meaning that Richard Nixon actually won the 1960 election. And as far as that goes, man, irony abounds. See, the mistake many make in their various Kennedy analysis is that they confuse JFK before he became president with JFK after he became president. Kennedy went through some very profound changes very soon after taking office. His very first serious wake-up call came when the Central Intelligence Agency, under the leadership of the infamous uber-Nazi, Alan Dulles, first lied to and then tried to blackmail Kennedy into invading Cuba, which at that particular time was the equivalent of declaring World War III. Outraged, Kennedy instead left the CIA's mercenary army stranded on the Cuban beach with no air support. They were all quickly and easily killed or captured by the Cuban army. Then Kennedy fired Alan Dulles. He privately stated that he wanted to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces. Then he declared open warfare upon the entire war machine. As a result of the friction betwixt Kennedy and the war machine, Kennedy found himself in the truly ironic position during the Cuban Missile Crisis of trusting his ostensible enemy, Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev, more than he trusted his own national security team. Thus, in addition to his many other talents, John F. Kennedy was a shrewd judge of character. And yet another of the many, many ironies involved in this whole situation is that Khrushchev was in exactly the same position. The most famous of the famous personal exchanges between Kennedy and Khrushchev during the missile crisis was when both men, incredibly, admitted to the other that neither man was sure that he could prevent his own military from launching a first nuclear strike. No shite. Now, I don't know what the Russians were estimating, but it has now been documented that the American, quote, experts, unquote, estimated that the United States could survive the retaliation from a first nuclear strike with around 40 million casualties. Guess what, kids? It has also been documented that most of the members of the military machine considered this to be an acceptable price to pay in order to destroy the Soviet Union. Really? Acceptable to whom? Whom?
Do you suppose we could take a vote on whether 40 million casualties would be acceptable? Now, hardly anybody realizes how close these people came to blowing up our world. Kennedy single-handedly stopped them, in fact. Thanks to Kennedy, World War III was barely averted, even without rogue submarine commanders preparing to launch nuclear missiles without orders, as also happened during the missile crisis. Which, check out last week's show for the details of that incredible story. And, again, amazingly and ironically, Khrushchev also single-handedly prevented World War III by stopping his military from launching a first strike. Yes, kids, lots of single hands stopped lots of major end-of-the-world shite from happening during those few weeks. Thanks to Khrushchev opening a direct back channel with Kennedy during the missile crisis, and he did that by smuggling to him a handwritten personal letter that was hidden inside a newspaper, World War III was averted. Then, after that, for an all too brief period of time, there was a true promise of a real and meaningful peace breaking out in the world. Now, enunciation of that dream came powerfully in June of 1963 when Kennedy threw down the gauntlet during his famous American University speech, wherein he blasted the war machine and the whole mentality behind it. During the speech, Kennedy lays out a detailed path to peace between the two superpowers. And you can find this speech on YouTube or go listen to the speech. And I'm quite sure that Nikita Khrushchev was listening intently to this speech. Unfortunately, so was the war machine. And I'm personally convinced that this speech, while not the reason for his assassination, at least was the frosting that iced his fate. Just over 5 months later, 50 years ago today, as I write, the war machine won. Then, after 5 years of lackey Lyndon Johnson pumping up the war machine fatter than ever, Nixon finally came to power. Now, an interesting side note that I just heard listening to one of Matt's programs on KOWA. Now, I have not second-sourced this, but this guy said that one of Nixon's first acts as president was to demand that the CIA turn over to him all of their files on the Bay of Pigs and on the Kennedy assassination. Now, that is very significant. I did know that Nixon was obsessed with the Bay of Pigs throughout his presidency, and I have always wondered why. But according to this gentleman, the CIA refused to turn over their files. This was a declaration of war! This is a democracy, and since Nixon was the people's toughest elected representative in all that democracy, and since the CIA was directly under command of the executive branch and would be subject to the direct orders of the president, even if they weren't already directly subject to the executive branch, Nixon was understandably quite outraged over this refusal. Who was the boss around here, anyway? And thus began a quiet, secret, but very serious blood feud betwixt Nixon and the CIA. Yes, kids, this was yet another epic behind-the-scenes battle between the president and the war machine. Nixon knew the risk as well as anyone. He intentionally picked one of the most vile human beings ever to grace politics to be his vice president, specifically so that the first alternative to Nixon would be utterly unacceptable. But yet again, the war machine prevailed. After first sending Agnew off to federal prison and replacing him with machine lackey and Warren Commission member Gerald Ford, within the space of 10 years, America thus experienced its second coup d'etat. And as with so many other aspects of Richard Nixon, there is profound irony in the fact that upon learning of the Watergate break-in, it is now known that Nixon was initially puzzled, since breaking into the Democratic Party headquarters was a completely useless thing to do. But Nixon almost immediately came to the correct conclusion. He said, "Somebody is being set up."
Time to get to work. And thus ends part one of the Thunderbolt, Why You Should Be Upset. Next comes part two, What Can Be Done About It? Across Cascadia, the masses are arising in response to
the Olympia Action Alert
for the week of November 23rd through November 29th, 2019. This is Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. ¶¶ see you next week.
The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt, nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com, and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And a quick note here, the Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes, or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net, where you can also find the show notes, as well as a year's worth of downloadable episodes of the Thunderbolt.
Thank you very much.